Brautzeit. Der Gravel-Podcast mit Paul Voss und Caroline Schiff.
Moin moin, herzlich willkommen zu einer heute eigentlich doch sehr speziellen Folge vom Outside-Podcast, weil wir auf Deutsch anfangen und dann versuchen Englisch zu sprechen, was wahrscheinlich ins Englische übergeht. Aber erstmal hallo Caro.
Hi Paul, die Betonung liegt auf versuchen. Ich möchte mich schon mal hier für mein wahrscheinlich nicht professionelles Englisch entschuldigen, aber ich gebe mein Bestes. Mein Talent liegt auf jeden Fall nicht bei Fremdsprachen. Insofern habt bitte Nachsicht.
Ja, Dito, also auch wenn ich mich in den letzten Tagen wieder viel auf Englisch unterhalten habe, das funktioniert schon ganz gut, aber es fehlen dann doch manchmal so ein paar komplexe Worte, wo man dann immer versucht, so Dinge zu umschreiben und das klingt dann zum Teil lustig. Aber ja, wir werden es hinkriegen.
Ich denke auch, also man wird uns verstehen, aber umso mehr freue ich mich auch über die Gästin und deswegen bin ich auch gerne bereit, mein schlechtes Englisch auszupacken.
Genau, aber zu ihr dann später mehr, also wer da zu Gast ist, das erzählen wir euch einfach später, kurz bevor wir reingehen. Werbung. Ich habe eine Event-Empfehlung für euch. Das Red Bull Aufsatteln. Am 13. April findet auf der Galopprennbahn in Bremen ein einzigartiges Offroad-Rennen mit spannendem Team- und Turnierformat statt. Beim Red Bull Aufsatteln geht ihr in Zweierteams an den Start, sei es als rein männliches, weibliches oder auch als Mixed-Team. Ihr benötigt hierfür keine Lizenz, dürft aber natürlich auch als LizenzsportlerInnen an dem Rennen teilnehmen. Das heißt, es kann auch jemand mit einer Lizenz und eine Person ohne Lizenz zusammen im Team fahren. Das Rennen hat ein besonderes Format, welches ich als sportlicher Leiter mitgestaltet habe. Auf dem 3,5 Kilometer langen Kurs gibt es insgesamt drei Läufe. Der erste ist ein Teamzeitfahren, gefolgt von der Hauptrunde im Heatsystem, wobei jede Kategorie ihren eigenen Lauf hat. Das große Finale findet als Massenstart statt. Ihr könnt sowohl mit eurem Gravel als auch Crossrad an den Start gehen. Weitere Infos sowie die Anmeldung findet ihr auf redbull.com/aufsatteln. Es gibt insgesamt 200 Teamstartplätze und ihr könnt euch noch bis zum 12. April anmelden. Den Link zum Rennen findet ihr wie immer in den Shownotes. Ich hoffe, wir sehen uns in Bremen. Werbung Ende. Aber erstmal, wie geht's dir? Wie ist die Lage in Bremen?
Mir geht's gut. Bremen ist wie immer grau. Ich bin erst seit heute Morgen wieder da. Ich war eine Woche auf Mallorca zum Training und da war es eigentlich ganz schön. Also da war auf jeden Fall viel Sonne. Ein Tag war richtig Regen. Da bin ich auch ordentlich nass geworden, bin auch gefahren. Aber ja, ansonsten war es wirklich eine gute Trainingswoche und ich glaube, die Form kommt langsam. Also vom Gefühl her geht's bergauf. Ich fühle mich einfach langsam wieder besser beim Radfahren und auch merke auch, dass nach hinten raus auf jeden Fall immer noch viel Substanz da ist. Insofern hoffe ich, dass die Rennen dann auch gut laufen, wenn es wieder losgeht.
Du hast zumindest irgendwas gepostet, dass du einen Testtag hattest?
Genau, ja, eigentlich habe ich regelmäßig Testtage, weil mein Coach liebt Tests.
Auf einer Skala von 1 bis 10, wie sehr magst du die?
Ja, bei mir ist es eher so Richtung 0, beziehungsweise nach dem Test bin ich eigentlich immer ganz happy, aber so vor dem Test, der Tag ist dann immer eher so mäßig, also die Laune ist am Anfang des Tages auch nicht so gut, weil ich erstmal, es ist einfach wie so eine Prüfung jedes Mal und ich habe halt immer keine Lust, am Ende enttäuscht zu werden, wobei, ja, es lief alles gut und ich muss einfach immer draußen bestimmte, also 3 Minuten und 12 Minuten Test fahren und
All das out machen wir oder auf...
Genau, ja, okay. all out, aber... mein Coach sagt immer, ich bin sehr deutsch, weil eigentlich meine Ergebnisse immer sehr gleichmäßig sind. Also wahrscheinlich bräuchte ich einfach mal jemanden, der mit mir den Test fährt, so ein Vladi oder so, der mich nochmal ein bisschen motiviert und ich auch an die Kotzgrenze gehe, weil ich fahre einfach, ich weiß, welche Watt ich fahren kann und die fahre ich auch.
Ja, weil 3 Minuten ist ja eigentlich Also wenn man so richtig fährt, ist ja, man geht zu hoch rein und so versucht zu halten. Das ist ja normal, so in 3 Minuten. Aber wahrscheinlich, ich kann mir bei dir vorstellen, der ist eher, du gehst rein und bleibst da, ne?
Genau, so, ja. Also, so mache ich es eigentlich eher bei 1 Minute. Da gehe ich immer all out rein und dann halt, was am Ende übrig bleibt. Aber bei 3 Minuten weiß ich halt meine Watt und fahre die. Und irgendwie deswegen ändern die sich eigentlich meistens auch nicht so richtig viel.
Ja.
Genau, und 12 Minuten, ja. Das ist auf jeden Fall besser geworden. Ich finde, da kann man immer noch eher Unterschiede sehen, weil 3 Minuten, das kriegt man auch, finde ich, mit einer nicht so tollen Form irgendwie nochmal hin.
Ja, na gut, 3 Minuten ist ja so ein V2 Max-Test, ne? Also,
ja.
Ja, gut, aber ich glaube auch, da bräuchst du wahrscheinlich eher jemanden, der, also halt wahrscheinlich vielleicht sogar ein Motorbike oder irgendwas, was dich halt so ein bisschen pusht. Weil das ist
genau.
Halt, du bist jetzt auch nicht so der explosive Typ, da ist es echt schwer, da richtig tief zu gehen. Einfach, also,
ja.
Da musst du ja hin, wo du so gar nicht hin willst.
Also. Ja, genau. Und das ist halt auch immer das, was mich morgens schon nervt, weil ich genau weiß, das tut mega weh, diese Art Intervall. Und mein Trainer liebt es halt, weil er sagt, es ist auf der einen Seite ein gutes Training, weil das Aufwärmprogramm ist halt auch schon immer so leicht intensiv. Und andererseits kriegt er halt immer einen guten Einblick, wie ich so drauf bin, und deswegen habe ich die eigentlich jedes Mal im Programm, wenn ich auf Mallorca bin.
Ja, sehr schön. Ja, genau. Bei mir stehen auch jetzt Tests an. Ich fahre morgen nach Köln, also heute ist Montag, und fahre dann am Mittwoch einen Labortest mal wieder.
Auch sehr schön.
Ja, also
magst du das?
Also, ja, keine Ahnung, also mittlerweile ist mir das sehr egal, muss ich sagen. Also ja, früher habe ich mich auch mal heiß gemacht mit, wann mache ich den am Tag, damit ich auf der Waage schön auch leicht bin, weißt du, damit
so
Watt pro Kilogramm.
Genau.
Das ist mir mittlerweile halt egal, weil ich ja weiß, dass es so irrelevant ist.
Ja, ist es
also
auch.
Nicht irrelevant, aber.
Aber es ist eine Momentaufnahme.
Ja, es ist eine Momentaufnahme, und ja, ich weiß halt, das wird halt wehtun. Also ich kann es halt eh nicht ändern. Ich muss da durch. Und ja, genau, von daher, ja, gehört halt dazu, ne?
Ja.
Ja, genau.
Aber ich finde, Indoor ist auch immer noch irgendwie schlimmer. Also dann lieber Outdoor.
So ja, nee, jetzt. Mittlerweile, ey, ich sehe das halt echt, keine Ahnung, ich bin ja voll pragmatisch geworden. Früher auch, habe ich mich voll fertig gemacht. Mittlerweile denke ich mir so, ist ja Teil des Jobs, muss ich halt machen.
Ja.
So. Also ich komme halt, ich kann halt rumjammern, aber es wird halt nicht, also ich muss es halt trotzdem machen. Also,
ja,
weißt du, es wird halt
ja
nicht
klar,
besser.
Man kommt nicht drum rum, nee,
ja,
es ist so. Ja, ich finde es halt so, wenn ich auf Mallorca bin, das machen muss. Ich weiß halt immer, alle anderen, die halt nicht professionell Radfahren, die haben wieder eine entspannte Kaffeerunde vor sich, und ich muss halt meinen Kram da machen, und das macht man dann halt immer alleine. Aber ja.
Genau.
Das kann man verkraften.
Dann, dann, wenn ich eh schon in Köln bin, werde ich auch mal weiter nach Aachen fahren, mal ein bisschen gucken, wie. Ob ich da.
Ah,
ja,
guckst du dir die Strecke an?
So ein bisschen Recon machen. Ja, ich habe jetzt gerade Recon-Zeit. Also ich reise gerade rum, um mir Strecken anzuschauen.
Das ist auch krass, oder? Dass eigentlich schon so weit ist, dass man, um wirklich vorne zu fahren, im besten Fall die Strecke eigentlich schon mal vorher gesehen hat, ne?
Ja, also ich war jetzt ja auch in Girona letzte Woche. Auch eigentlich nur, um mir die 100er-Runde anzugucken, die 200er. Und die 100er war jetzt nicht so überraschend, also das AB 200 war gut, es zu sehen, weil ich mein Setup halt ändern muss, so von dem, wie ich sonst normalerweise fahren würde, weil es mega grob geworden ist. Also erstmal viel schwerer, und das heißt, ich fahre eigentlich immer 48 Mono und hinten 10 44. Also ich komme da schon hoch mit, aber ich würde jetzt allen hinter mir, also alle, die, sagen wir mal, nicht vorne im Sieg mitfahren wollen, würde ich jetzt nicht raten, so an den Start zu gehen. Weil das ist so steil, dass der, ja, so 40, 42, wenn man jetzt einfach normal fit ist, sozusagen, braucht man schon.
So, okay, ja, das ist ja gut zu wissen, weil ich weiß von einigen, die da an den Start gehen wollen, also die halt auf Hobby-Niveau Radfahren. Und
ja,
also
ich würde kein 46er Mono machen. Ich würde auch keinen 44er. Ich würde echt, weil klar, du hast natürlich auf der Fläche, fehlt eventuell ein Gang, aber das ist schon steil. Also schon unangenehm steil. Und genau das. Und vor allem ist es vom Start weg richtig schwer direkt. Und die Abfahrten sind brutal.
grob, ne? Weil ja. Das war ja das, was ich bei Santa Wall auch schon, ich denke mal, da waren ja auch einige Abschnitte drin, die auch bei Trucker sein werden. Und da fand ich auch schon, das war irgendwie anders als Trucker letztes Jahr.
Ja, also da. ich habe mir da auch einen Reifen zerhauen, obwohl ich nicht schnell gefahren bin. Also ich habe jetzt kein Risiko genommen, aber ich bin mit Nathan Haas rumgefahren. Der kann ja auch gut bergunter fahren. Wir haben es halt rollen lassen, aber jetzt nicht irgendwie stupid. Und habe mir da Hinterreifen zerhauen und also 40 wird es für mich zu klein sein, zu schmal. Ich werde auf jeden Fall 45 fahren. Weil die Abfahrten sind schon richtig böse. Also so ja. Auch richtig große Steine und auch spitze Steine zum Teil. Und du hast auch richtig steile Abfahrten mit drin. Auch dann dieser lange Berg, weißt du, der bei der Rennhälfte war.
Der, den wir bei Santa Wall, sind wir den hochgefahren. Ich glaube, den fährt man bei Trucker dann runter, ne? Wo so ein Singletrail am Ende kommt.
Nee, also den Berg, den wir letztes Jahr gefahren sind, wir sind letztes Jahr nur einen richtigen Berg gefahren. Genau.
Ja, okay.
Dann sind wir hochgefahren, dann sind wir in der Abfahrt runter und dann kam unser Gegenanstieg.
Ja.
So, und der ist aber noch länger jetzt, der Gegenanstieg. Den hat er nochmal verlängert. Und von dem Berg runter ist eine Abfahrt, die ist schon echt, also die sieht erstmal nicht gefährlich aus, die ist aber mega steil und die hat so ganz losen Sand. Und da kannst du dich richtig auf die Fresse packen, wenn du halt so schnell reinfährst. Ja, und die Abfahrten von den ersten Bergen haben es richtig in sich. Also, das ist nicht schön. Also da ist auf jeden Fall, da kannst du das Rennen direkt irgendwie zerhauen. Weil du das Material kaputt machst. Also das ist schon böse, ja.
Ja, das mit den Reifen hatte ich auch, als ich jetzt da war, schon gedacht, dass 45 wahrscheinlich schon Sinn macht, ne? Auch aus Komfortsicht auch, weil das ist schon ruppig, ne?
Also ist auch viel, also die ersten 40 Kilometer, du hast das Gefühl, du bist schon 3 Stunden, 4 Stunden unterwegs. Weil du hast so viele Richtungsänderungen, also es passiert so viel in der Zeit. Also auch mental ist es wesentlich fordernder. Weißt du, also bis du in diesen Teil kommst, wo du diese Alleen hast, weißt du, dieses Waldstück, wo du auch so ewig lange geradeaus fährst irgendwann. Das dauert ewig, bis du da bist. Weil du halt die ersten 30 Kilometer fährst du ja nur berghoch und berghunter. Und ist schon ein harter Kurs. Also es ist nicht so viel mehr Höhenmeter, aber irgendwie so wie das jetzt alles liegt, ist es schon brutal. Also es ist echt schwer geworden. Und wo ich mir letztes Jahr meinen Reifen zerhauen habe mit der Felge, da fahren wir auch wieder lang, aber jetzt ist es gemäht. Also du siehst jetzt, wo du langfährst. aber da liegen jetzt auch Baumstämme rum und so. Das heißt, es ist noch ein bisschen technischer geworden. Man muss auch einmal über so einen Baum rüberfahren.
Ich glaube, da sind wir bei Santa Wall auch lang, meine ich, oder?
Fährst du nochmal rüber hin?
Ja, genau. Ich bin gerade sehr froh, dass wir, also ich fliege am nächsten Montag rüber.
Ja.
Und dann haben wir 3 Tage Downhill-Training, genau, auch auf Streckenteilen des Rennens. Und danach mache ich nochmal 3 Tage Normaltraining.
Ja. Also hat sich richtig gelohnt, auch die 100er Runde, sich die anzuschauen und so. Und ich habe auf jeden Fall Bock.
Ja, bin ich froh, dass ich das auch mache, weil sonst, wenn man wirklich vorne mitfahren will, glaube ich, kommt man da nicht drum rum um die Streckenkenntnisse.
Nee, also vor allen Dingen ja auch die Woche vorher wird es ja so voll sein in der Stadt.
Ja,
und dann sich alles anzugucken, ist dann auch immer so ein bisschen stressig.
Ja.
Aber ist krass, Alter, wie viele Leute einfach da waren.
Jetzt schon, ne?
Ja, überall, wo du hingehst, also du erkennst ja RadfahrerInnen auch immer relativ einfach, also das ist ja so ein Stereotyp und mich eingeschlossen oder uns eingeschlossen, aber es ist halt schon sehr, sehr, sehr krass. Also es ist brutal. Sehr, sehr brutal.
Mir ist es zu viel in Girona. Also ich denke, dass jedes Mal wieder, wenn ich in Palma bin, ich bin ganz froh, dass ich häufiger in Palma bin.
Ja, ja.
Da ist natürlich klar, da sind auch viele Radfahrer, aber das vermischt sich da irgendwie eher und
ja.
Gefällt mir besser.
Ja, genau. Nee, sonst war nichts Neues. Ich habe noch einen Podcast mit Payson McAlvin aufgenommen. Du warst ja auch schon mal bei ihm.
Ja.
Genau, cool. Der ist jetzt auch draußen. Also ich glaube, der Adventure Stash heißt der, ne?
Ja, genau.
Genau, der Adventure Stash. Könnt ihr mal reinhören, ist so auf Englisch, also auch Denglisch in meinem Fall. aber fanden halt nicht, also ich persönlich fand ihn auch ganz okay. Von daher, wer Bock hat, da mal reinzuhören.
Ich finde, Payson macht das ganz gut. Also ich habe mich da wohl gefühlt, als er das mit mir gemacht hat.
Ja, ja, auf jeden Fall. Hat auch Spaß gemacht, ja.
Ja.
Dann gab es jetzt ein Rennen in Texas, was Keegan Swenson gewonnen hat bei den Männern und Sophia, wie heißt sie weiter?
Gomez Villa.
Villa, ja, genau, Gomez
auf
Villa.
Jeden Fall
Villa.
Gomez.
Nein, einfach Gomez Villa. Genau, auf jeden Fall, die sind ja auch ein Couple und die gewinnen da drüben ja alles, wenn Caro nicht da ist. Und auf jeden Fall da derjenige, der Zweiter wird. Also ich habe mich ja immer gefragt, wann wir den Punkt erreichen, wo Leute wirklich mit einer Scheibe bei Gravelrennen am Start stehen. Also wir sind jetzt an dem Punkt angekommen, weil der Typ, der Zweiter geworden ist, ist mit Zeit vor Auflieger gefahren, ist jetzt nichts Ungewöhnliches, aber auch mit einer Scheibe. Also mit einer Zeitfahrscheibe. Die war zwar in der Mitte, also da war zwar noch ein kleines Loch, das war so eine Headscheibe, ich weiß nicht, ob das Modell genauso ist oder vielleicht hat er es angepasst. Also das Loch der Scheibe in der Mitte von der Narbe ausgehend war dann ungefähr so groß wie hinten so Mountainbike-Kassette. Aber es war einfach eine Scheibe.
Krass, ne? Und der Hersteller war Head. Also ist der gesponsert von Head, oder?
Das weiß ich. Ja, ich glaube, der fährt bei diesem Laufteam, weißt du?
Ah, okay.
Diese Fahrräder, Laufmazda. Mhm. Und ich glaube, die werden von Head gesponsert. Aber trotzdem, also ich hatte ja immer gehofft, dass wir da an diesem Punkt nicht kommen.
Ja, ich finde es auch schlimm. Aber ich kann mir auch vorstellen, dass das ganz schnell verboten wird.
Ja, gut, aber das sind ja so individuelle Rennen, ne? Also das ist ja nicht zugehörig zu irgendeinem Format.
Ja.
Kann natürlich sein, dass man das in Zukunft verbietet. Ich weiß nicht.
Also ich bin schon kein Freund dieser Auflieger und jetzt auch noch eine Scheibe. Nee, ganz ehrlich.
Vor allem, das muss ja auch ballern die ganze Zeit. Das muss laut sein.
Das muss so laut sein. Ja. Nee.
Ja, weiß ich nicht. Also,
das muss nicht. Ich meine, gut, er ist Zweiter damit geworden. Der Kurs muss dann ja auch eigentlich nur komplett flach. Geradeaus und flach. Und ja.
Aber trotzdem. Also die haben sich hingepackt in der Verpflegungszone, als er einen Trinkrucksack angenommen hat. Hat er sich und Keegan zur Straße gezogen quasi.
Ach krass. Ja, da waren sowieso in dem Rennen, habe ich auch noch von einem anderen ziemlich krassen Sturz gehört, wo auch die Fahrerin von SD Works, die extra rübergeflogen ist, hat sich da wohl ziemlich zerlegt, beziehungsweise ihr Rad hat sie ziemlich zerlegt und konnte dann auch nicht weiterfahren, war glaube ich bis dahin in Führung. Und genau, die war nämlich auch für den Belgian Waffle Ride schon drüben und ist mit Anna van der Breggen zusammen rübergeflogen. Das finde ich eigentlich auch schon krass, dass die jetzt halt auch von SD Works da den Support bereitstellen.
Was macht Anna van der Breggen da drüben?
Die hat sie supportet, so als sportliche Leiterin und so. Und das fand ich schon krass, weil ich meine, die macht sonst das World Tour Team. Ja.
Na, ich denke, dass da wahrscheinlich Specialized auch gerade ein gewisses Interesse hat, da in die Richtung was zu machen. Europa haben die jetzt da nicht die Top-Athletinnen, muss man sagen. Also jetzt, sie haben sie jetzt, aber bis dahin.
Bis dahin noch nichts, nee.
Ja, genau. Und von daher, mal gucken. Jetzt wollte ich gerade noch auch was anderes noch hinaus, aber das habe ich jetzt wieder vergessen. Ah ja, weißt du, wer rüberkommt für Österreich?
Brandon?
Ja.
Ja, siehste, hast du mir gedacht.
Genau.
Ich wusste es nicht, aber ich finde, es passt zu ihm, weil er ist so ein Alpentyp. Und
ja, genau. Also, sobald
ich glaube, die
Alpen
Strecke
geht,
liegt ihm auch. Ja, genau.
Genau, also der kommt rüber, freue ich mich drauf. Und also hab ich auf jeden Fall schon mal jemanden, der Gas geben wird. Das ist immer sehr gut.
Einfach, ja, da weißt du, welches Hinterrad
richtig,
du
das perfekte Hinterrad suchen musst. Ich fand auch, der Johnny Hoogeland hat ja bei sich einen Post rausgehauen auf Instagram, wo er so ein bisschen die Strecke erklärt hat, aber irgendwie hat mir das leider auch nicht weitergeholfen mit dem, was ich fahren soll. Hast du gelesen?
Ich habe es nur im Groben gesehen und habe eigentlich gedacht, dass die Strecke nicht das ist, was man sich denkt, wenn man in die Alpen zu einem Rennen fährt.
Also, was ist das?
Ja, eher, also ich hätte jetzt Österreich, Wörter, sehr, die eher viele Höhenmeter gedacht, aber Ich glaube, das ist nicht.
Nee, ist nicht so.
Ja.
Ist halt so zwei Anstiege drin pro Runde. Ich glaube, 600 Höhenmeter ungefähr insgesamt pro Runde. Und einmal 20% irgendwie Spitze drin. Aber das ist halt so, weil mittlerweile, ich will halt so ein paar Sachen ausprobieren. Das ist halt echt nervig, wenn du nicht genau weißt, wie die Strecke ist. Und wenn du nicht weißt, also ich würde zum Beispiel gerne eine Straßenkassette fahren, weil dann die Abstufung besser ist. Und auch leichter vor allen Dingen. Und auch so mit Reifen wieder rumprobieren. Und da wurde, jetzt, da wurde jetzt quasi gesagt, von Slick bis Matschreifen.
Das ist ja eine gute Angabe. Also nimm alles mit.
Ja, genau.
Ja gut, wir haben bei Schwalbe ja eher, eigentlich haben wir ja nur zwei Optionen, was das Profil angeht.
Vier.
Also außer du, ja, ja gut, die Breite jetzt noch.
Nee, es gibt drei, es gibt drei, die uns jetzt schon zugänglich sind und ich glaube auch bald eine vierte.
Okay.
Genau.
Also ich plane immer nur zwei Optionen ein. Bisher.
Echt? Nee, ich plane.
Bisher, ja.
Ich plane immer mit drei bis. Mit vier mittlerweile, ne?
Okay.
Also sagen wir so, es wird immer komplexer.
Ja, also. das finde ich auch schon wieder nervig. Also ich bin eigentlich immer froh, welchen Reifen drauf, aber um den überall fahren kann.
Ja.
Aber du bist doch bestimmt auch rechtzeitig da, dass du da noch ein bisschen was umswitchen kannst, oder?
Ja, ich komme auch erst zwei Tage vorher. Ein Freitag ist das, glaube ich. Nee.
Ah ja.
Nee, wann ist das Rennen?
Am Donnerstag. Das Rennen ist Sonntag. Ich komme Donnerstag.
Genau, ich fahre erst am Freitag los. Ja.
Hast du auch das Wochenende von Veranstalter?
Ja, aber ich habe es abgelehnt.
Okay.
Weil ich die ganzen Verpflichtungen nicht eingehen will. Und
mit dem Dinner und was?
Ja, genau. Und dann halt auch noch ein paar andere Dinge, die ja mit drin standen, auch mit Social Media und so.
Mhm.
Und plus, ich habe ja meine Schwester dabei, Kadir und Nils noch. Also ich habe ja Videografen,
ach so,
Fotografen
okay,
noch.
Und ja, dann.
Das ist halt, also ja, klingt irgendwie schön, in so einem schönen Hotel zu sein. Aber er müsste sich für die auch was da buchen und dann, also
ja, das steht kein Verhältnis. Nee. Ja. Aber ich habe mir nur gedacht, bei dem Hotel, ob die wissen, wen sie da dann, also ich meine Radfahrer, die werden ja auch einige Radfahrer im Hotel haben. Das ist jetzt nicht so ein Fünf-Sterne-Hotel.
Ich wollte auch, außerdem finde ich es gut, ich kann eigentlich einfach mein eigenes Essen mit. Ich kann halt immer alles machen wie immer. Und in so einem Hotel, da muss man abends immer in ein Restaurant und so, da habe ich halt gar keinen Bock drauf. Und auch, klar, so ein Dinner abends ist irgendwie cool. Aber für mich sind jetzt die Rennen einfach zu wichtig dieses Jahr.
Ja klar, ich meine, es ist halt kein Urlaub, ne? Und den Weinempfang und was nimmt man ja dann nicht mit.
Ja, insofern. Genau. Von daher, nee, also ich bin da, aber ja. Aber dann fliegst du nach Klagenfurt, oder?
Nee, ich habe vorher schon die Woche vorher am Bodensee ein Fotoshooting mit meinem Brillensponsor.
Ah, okay, dann fährst du einfach weiter.
Und dann fahre ich weiter, genau.
Okay.
Und Fladdy kommt mit. Vladi nimmt eine Vespa mit.
Von da unten?
Nee, von hier. Also wir haben jetzt ein Auto, wo eine Vespa so reingeschoben werden kann.
Ich dachte gerade, der Vespa-Messi hat sich jetzt noch irgendwo eine Vespa da unten geschossen und nimmt die dann noch
wieder zurück. Oh Gott, ja, hat er wahrscheinlich auch. Also da gehe ich mal von aus. Aber wir nehmen eine von hier mit. Ja,
ja, okay, sehr gut. Hast du noch was auf dem Zettel?
Nee, das war es erstmal so als Update.
Ja, dann können wir mal zu unserer Gästen rübergehen. Aber wir können ja so eine kleine Einleitung vielleicht auf Deutsch machen, bevor wir dann gleich, wie gesagt, ins Englische überwechseln. Also wir haben jetzt dann die Sophie de Boer gleich am Start. Ich werde sie so richtig vorstellen, wenn sie hier dabei ist. Aber ich kenne Sophie schon seit ein paar Jahren. Ich glaube, du kennst sie jetzt auch nicht so richtig persönlich, außer mal ab und zu so vielleicht im Rennen miteinander gefahren, aber
ja.
Ist interessant, dass sie jetzt unsere erste englische Gästin ist. Also eigentlich hatten wir hatten ja eigentlich schon mal zwei Podcasts aufgenommen auf Englisch. Die kamen aber
beide
nie raus.
Irgendwie nicht so richtig, bisschen schief gegangen.
Ja, genau. Und das Interessante ist ja bei dem Christian Meyer, den wir ja auch hatten, das gleiche ist ja Payson auch passiert. Da hatte ja auch Christian Meyer als Gast und da ist auch was ausgefallen, weshalb dann die Spur weg war, so wie bei uns. Nur, dass er halt noch ein Backup hatte. Zwar ein schlechtes, aber der hatte wenigstens eins und wir hatten ja gar keins.
Nee, das tat auch weh bei der Aufnahme.
Ja, aber die war gut.
Die war wirklich gut, ja.
Ja, genau. Hoffen wir mal, dass es heute besser funktioniert.
Ja, ich gehe mal davon aus. Ja, aber ich kenne sie auch eigentlich ja nur vom Rennen fahren. Wir sind Straßenrennen und Crossrennen zusammen gefahren. Cross ist sie natürlich auf einem komplett anderen Niveau gefahren. Genau, und jetzt haben wir mal eine Zeit lang mal so ein bisschen hin und her geschrieben und dann hat es jetzt halt ergeben, jetzt durch ihren Gravel-Einstieg, dass sie einfach mal bei uns in den Podcast kommt.
Werbung. Unser heutiger Partner ist Pillar Performance. Für diejenigen unter euch, die hier neu sind. Pillar ist ein Unternehmen für Mikronährstoffe, das Produkte entwickelt, die eine Schnittstelle zwischen pharmazeutischer Intervention und Nahrungsergänzungsmitteln für SportlerInnen bildet. Am einfachsten lässt es sich so beschreiben: Hydrations- und Kohlenhydratprodukte bringen euch bis zur Ziellinie. Pillars Mission ist es, AthletInnen immer wieder in bester Verfassung an den Start zu bringen.
Ja, Paul und ich, wir nutzen beide das Triple Magnesium von Pillar Performance. Und zudem wurde Pillar auch gerade offizieller Mikronutrition-Partner des Israel Premier Tech Cycling Teams. Wir nehmen das Triple Magnesium circa 30 Minuten vor dem Zuschlafengehen. Und ich merke wirklich deutlich, dass ich mich auch am nächsten Tag dadurch viel erholter fühle. Und das kann ich auch ganz deutlich an den Werten meines Whoops erkennen. Zudem kann ich sehen, wenn ich meinen Schlaf analysiere, dass die Werte wirklich deutlich positiver sind und ich einen viel tieferen Schlaf habe, wenn ich vorher das Triple Magnesium genommen habe. Also ihr braucht nicht unbedingt den Kaffee am nächsten Morgen nehmen, um fit in den Tag zu starten, sondern einfach am Tag vorher das Triple Magnesium vor dem Schlafen gehen und fühlt euch deutlich erholter und energiegeladener am nächsten Tag.
Wenn ihr Pillar auch mal ausprobieren möchtet, geht einfach zu pillarperformance.shop und gebt den Code OUTSIDE ein, um 15% Rabatt auf eure erste Bestellung zu bekommen. Ich wiederhole, OUTSIDE, alles groß geschrieben, AUTSAIDE, um 15% auf eure erste Bestellung zu erhalten. Den Link findet ihr wie immer in den Shownotes. Werbung Ende. So now we have Sophie De Boer with us. Sophie is 33 years old, living part-time on Mallorca, but is from the Netherlands, is a former world-class cyclocross rider while winning the overall cyclocross World Cup in 2017, has become a mother last year, is now a commentator also for Dutch television, retired at the end of 2021 from cyclocross, and started again last year, no, sorry, 2022 with gravel racing. And yeah, we actually want to find out what's next for her and why she actually chose gravel at the end. So, hey, Sophie, how are you?
Hey, I'm very well. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good, looking forward thank you. Hey.
Looking forward to hear more of your stories, because I'm actually following you since many years, obviously because we're both coming from cyclocross, Caro and I, but at one point you have been like one of the, or you have been actually the best in the world for like a whole season and you're like this generation of female cyclists, especially from the Netherlands, which dominated the sport, or still dominating the sport in cyclocross, and dominated it also on the road. So yeah,
for me it's the same. I know you from maybe like you remember a race like Zeven in Germany, the World Cup race, and I know
yes.
that a lot of my friends always were very excited to watch you racing. So
I feel honored now, because you both are doing such a great job in gravel now. And I've been trying that for the last 2 years, but my gravel career is not really unfolding well. But you both are doing great. And that's very inspiring to watch.
But actually, I think last year, like one of the last episodes we did in 2022, we talked about like who maybe the people to watch, or the riders to watch for like 24, And yeah, like in the women's spectrum, your name came up because we always were like, if Sophie is going all in, you're probably definitely one of the riders to watch. Because I mean, with your Palmares and cyclocross, it's just like, yeah, I mean, it's just naturally that you, if you go all in, you will be one of the top competitors, I guess.
Yeah, well, it was the plan also for this season, gravel season, to be to race a full pro calendar. Eventually that didn't happen, but I'm still planning on doing a few gravel races. At the moment I'm not doing it professionally anymore. I'm again balancing it with part-time job, or yes, and so I have to change my mindset a little bit, because I think at the moment if you want to race in the front at the gravel races, you have to do it almost full time. I think the field, it is going crazy at the moment. I've watched a little bit of the Santa Val racing, the first gravel race, and I think the level, you can tell me, Caroline, but I think the level went up compared to last year, didn't it?
Yeah, I also have the feeling that there's a lot going on, and that there are a lot very motivated girls coming into the scene. And like you said, if you are not professional or doing it on a very high level, I think you are not able to be in the front at the races.
And no,
I mean,
you are a mom. You have also a small daughter. She's now today 1 year old.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's not easy to combine, and yeah.
No, so. It definitely isn't. One of the things I never thought about is that you have, when you have a baby, they are ill all the time. And so you are also ill all the time. Oh my God, it is horrible. So now, for me, the first gravel event that I'm going to do is the Traca, but I signed up for the pro race, the 200. But I changed it to the 560, the long adventure distance.
Because 200 is just not long enough.
Oh my God, I don't know. I got this email from them. How many hours do you think it will take you? And it was like, the first option was 24 to, I don't know, 30 hours. And then the last option is 78, I don't know, until 80 hours. And I was calculating and I was like, ooh, 75 hours, that's still quite fast.
Yeah.
But it's the last option. But I'm just going to approach it as an adventure. My plan was to focus to do it professionally again. And I have to say, now I don't have the time to train full time. I don't know if I want to race in between the pros, because for me, I just cannot do it like 50%. Mm-hmm. I want to go all in, or I don't want to. Well, I just go in for fun and I'll see what it brings. But I had the mindset to go all in. That changed a little bit. And yeah, now I had to think about, do I still want to race then? For me, it's very difficult to be at the start line and not be able to battle with the best. That's for me where the fun is in racing.
Yeah.
I can completely understand also with your background and the success you had. There's always, people will always think, oh, Sophie de Boer is on the start line. She will be in the front, and there's some pressure on you. But I think it's really cool that you try to avoid that, or try to, to not avoid, but don't care about it and go to the start line and try to enjoy the race. I mean, I don't know how to enjoy that, but to have as much fun as possible.
Yeah, I think it's like, I mean, that we both still have to learn, Caro, and I like to actually handle their own expectations. I think that's in the end the biggest problem, you know?
Yes.
Because you're expecting a lot from yourself, when you have been like a world-class athlete, like you've been in cyclocross, then you, as you said, you don't want to come in and just like, just ride around. So either it's a fun event for you or you want to compete. But doing like the 200 really, it's a fun event for most, but not for someone who has been like a top world-class athlete. I think then it's really hard to like switch that off and say, ah, I'm just here to ride. Yeah, then it's probably better doing the 560, seeing a bit more of the landscape, having a proper adventure for 72 hours or so.
Yes, well, I think maybe for the listeners, we should explain well that I signed the pro contract and that my contract was ended in the beginning of this year, so that I had to make the decision to not race professional again. And that also made me think, because after my contract was ended in January, I initially thought I'm just going to do the races, because I've been training for a few months and I'm going to see if I can make a setup myself. I mean, in gravel we have teams now, but we also have riders with which are sponsored privately, and I've been always working with Orbea for the last 2 years, and we try to figure out, okay, how can we make it a good situation for me to race? But after a few weeks, I found out, okay, gravel, I mean, actually, gravel is an elite sport. It is so expensive. If you want to do the events, it's and go to the bigger races, it's kind of crazy, actually. But, well, short version, I find out it's very difficult that with a very small budget to race professionally. So now that's why I made the decision to not do it full time anymore. But yes, for me, racing is, I don't know how it is for you, but for me, it always was. I want to be in the front and I want to compete. And that is for me where the fun in racing is, that you push yourself, but that you are also have to think about the tactical decisions, and that you have to keep an eye on your components and to be really in the game. And as I think for now, as you said, that this is very hard when you don't do it full time.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely like that. I mean, in the end, I see training now as like a job. So I still enjoy it, but it's like, I know I have to do this and this to be good in the race, to then actually enjoy the race, to go as deep as possible and try to win races. So yeah, I get it. I think if you don't have like the whole setup around you, it's hard to do that extra mile, which you have to do now also in gravel. I think 3 years ago, you will have been fine with doing just like, you're being, yeah, you know, like working a half time there, being a mom, and it doesn't mean like being a mom you can't be a top level athlete, but it certainly makes it harder, you know.
So, I completely underestimated it. And I think it was 3 years ago, even 2 years ago, I did the Traca 200, and it was a half year after I retired from cyclocross. So I still did a little bit of training, but not fully focused. And I thought, oh, this sounds nice. I go to Girona. It's 200 kilometers of gravel. I just got my gravel bike 1 week before the race, and I participated. And actually, I was in the front position, but 10 kilometers before the finish, I broke my wheel, and then I could not finish. So that was stupid, but it was one of the hardest things I ever did. And I remember that I was just in these last kilometers. I was, okay, it's only like 10 kilometers. I want to finish it. And I was winning, but I wasn't even thinking about that. I just want to finish, because it was such a struggle to do this. My arms, everything was hurting, and I was suffering so much. Then I thought, okay, now I'm going to finish, I'm going to win it. And then when you start thinking that, I rode on a rock with my back wheel, and then
Paul last year. But Paul just had 1 kilometer to go, so that was possible with running.
Yeah, I know. I had to ride 4K on a broken tire until the wheel collapsed, and then I had to run 4K. Yeah,
and luckily, you still won.
Yeah, luckily I had enough of a gap. Yeah.
Oh wow!
I had a good day, but let's start a bit in the beginning because I mean now we're talking about gravel, but in between that or before that, a lot of other things happened actually in your life. How did you start cycling, or how did you come to cycling?
Well, in Holland we have ice skating. It's very popular sport, and I started with that. And during summer, you always train on the bicycle. You do a bit of running and you do a bit of inline skating. So that's how I got into cycling. And actually, I was not very good in ice skating. I always crashed because I was not very well in sitting in the corners. You have to really sit on your back to not fall over when you're ice skating in the corners. So I decided, okay, I'm going to try cycling. My dad was also a cyclist, and I started with mountain biking, actually. So it was not a cyclocross, but in the junior races, I did a lot of mountain bike marathons in Germany, in the Enerwege.
Yeah, in the V-Cup,
yeah.
So you grew up close to the German border, or like in the
Yes, in Enschede.
Ah, okay.
It's near to Gronau.
Yeah.
And I used to go training in Bad Bentheim. So, and then I did a lot of marathons and these Juniorinnen races. Oh my God, my German is
it's good.
Horrible.
It's good. Juniorinnen or Juniorinnen.
So then I went with my dad and we did these races, and I did a few World Cups on the mountain bike, but it was way too technical for me. I had the Offenburg, but also Hoefalise, these races, they with the downhills, I was not very skilled technically on the mountain bike. So then I think at the age of 17, somebody said to me, you should try cyclocross. It's still cycling, it's still off-road, but it's not so technical as mountain biking. So I started doing that, and that immediately went well. It just went well. I did a few races, and I think one of my first races was a national championship for the juniors, and I got on the podium, and I got in the national team. So that went really smooth.
Nice. Did you back then had any idols? I mean, I can't remember.
Hanka Kupfernagel.
Ah, so Hanka.
Really?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, cool.
It's kind of special because she was this lady in cycling, and I don't know, I really admired her. And I think when I did, 2011, a world championship in St. Wendel, I went up to her and I said, hello, I really admire you. And she was very surprised. And then we raced also a few years, we raced together, but then she retired.
Yeah,
that's cool. Because yeah, I also have raced with her, and she was also like a mentor for me of some years ago.
Yeah, she was definitely like... out of like a male position or like view, she was more than just like being a female cyclist. Eh? She was like also a woman, which like back then, I mean, now it's more part of everything, but in the past it wasn't. You were just like an athlete. So, and I mean, Marianne Vos was the total opposite, or still is the total opposite to it. And, but Marianne, she's 3 years older than you, I think, eh?
Yes, I think so. 3 or 4 years, I think maybe she's your age, Caroline.
Yeah, she's my age, I think 1 year younger, like that.
So Marianne wasn't like, did you race against her, or was
oh my God, all the time?
Yeah.
Well, when I started cyclocross, I think it was in 2016, and Then there was the World Championship in Zeddam. It's in the Netherlands. And that was the first time Marianne got world champion. She was 19 years old then. Yes. And I think I was 15, 16. And she was racing with Hanka Kupfenhagen. And Hanka, she got second. And Marianne won. It was her first world title. So that was my first encounter with a big race in cyclocross. So then I decided, okay, I want to do this. And a few years later, I was racing with Marianne. And yeah, she was with the national championship. She was always in front of me. So I got a few times second or third. But it was always Marianne who won, was in front of me.
I think... You are not the only one, I think.
No,
but
no. I mean, I would have loved to win a national titles, but yeah, it didn't happen.
Yeah, I think that's a bad thing when you are Dutchy. Then you have so such a high competition.
Yeah, I mean, at the Dutch national championships since like it feels like the last
like
10
words.
Years. It's like the worlds.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It definitely is.
You have to be as strong as a world champ to actually win Dutch national championships. So,
and especially now in the last, I think when I was racing, we were also with a strong Dutch team, and I mean the names changed throughout the years a little bit, but at this moment, it is crazy, and you see that some riders make like Yara Kastelein, for instance, she made the decision to focus on road cycling more, and. It's not that in road cycling the competition is less, but one of the things that also made for me the decision to retire was that to be selected for the World Cups in the Netherlands, it became much harder because we were with too many women and not enough spots for the World Cups.
Yeah, but what do you think is the reason why you have... so many good female cyclists in the Netherlands? I mean, it started with Marianne like this, you know, and then, you know, you coming up and others, and it keeps going. It just...
Yes, Well, I think this question is... what is it? How do I say? People ask it to me very often.
Yeah.
Yes, and I mean, I don't have the perfect answer. But what I think is a combination of two things. On one hand, we have a lot of inspiration. I think if you have a good, if you have top athletes in your country, it functions as inspiration for young girls. I think that is one part of the answer. But the second part is that the girls also inspire each other to become better. And for instance, for cyclocross, we have a very well foundation for talent. So in the Netherlands, we have a few training points for this is especially for cyclocross training. And then, so I used to go to Alphen. It's in the south of the Netherlands. It's a training on Wednesday, and this training was held by Richard Groenendaal, Gerben de Knecht. So former pro athletes were doing this training for us, and we were training there with a lot of good athletes together. So in my last year as a cyclocross rider, I was training, for instance, with Sven van Empel, and we did the training together. So then you train with your competition, also Inge van der Heijden, Celine, Lucinda. We were training there together.
Yeah.
And that obviously makes you stronger when you are training with these girls. And we got technically we get the advice from the best from all professionals. So then the level is just very high.
Yeah, I mean it's a bit the same in Belgium. On the male side, there's like they have that as well. And I'm just always amazed. I mean, we had Marianne Vos in another podcast I make. Already as a guest, and I asked her the same question, but it's, I mean, no one really can say the reason. I always thought it's maybe like a scouting program, like in UK, you know, before the Olympic Games, where I knew the Olympic Games coming up, they just make this huge scouting program where Lizzie Dijknan elevated from and so on. But Netherlands.
We also have these. When I was young, I was we had the Rabobank Rabdagen. So this was initiated by the Rabobank team, and we would go to the Ardennen with for me, I was in with Lars van der Haar. He is my age, so it was him, but also female athletes from my age, and I think in mountain bike, Anna Terpstra, she's still racing professionally, and I have to think if there are still any other women from my age who are racing, still racing professionally. I don't know, I don't have a name now, but so this was also, yeah, this is also part of But I mean, it's a little bit hard to say. I think inspiration and also for cyclocross, the training facilities.
Yeah. I mean, I know how Carl, I mean, in Berlin, we had kind of, because I'm also being a cyclocross rider before I turned professional on the road. And we kind of had like a small hub here in like near Berlin. We had like Philipp Weitzleben, Christoph Pfingsten. So, I mean, Philipp won world championships and Pfingsten was second. So we had like a group of really good young guys, and we could push each other as well. But I think we're missing that in Germany. That's also the reason why I think we're not growing that well, because you don't have like this. Yeah, like this whole technical part of it, you know, and like this.
Well, if you talk about cyclocross, it is so extremely technical. Yeah. It's and the details that matter the most. I mean, for instance, what I think about is now that at these trainings, what we would practice was, you know, the moment when you are at the start line and you have to click in, the moment that you have to click in your pedal. This is crucial because the start, it is also a crucial aspect of the race. So we would train every week the perfection of clicking in the after, you know, when the lights turn green, you go and click in and then just, yeah. And also jumping off your bike. I mean, in a cyclocross race, you jump off your bike. It's some races not, but I mean, let's say you have to jump off 5 to 6 times in one lap. If you are faster than your opponent with 1 second, I mean, it's 5 seconds in one lap. If you do 6 laps, it's half a minute. So these details matter a lot. And and if you get also cornering, the right tire pressure, it's like cyclocross, it's like Formula One. And there are a lot of things that have an impact on the race. So it makes sense that if you are trained on a high level and you learn all these things, it makes a big difference on your outcome in the race.
Did you ever think about to give your knowledge to children, to like a trainer or things like that?
Well, at the moment I am learning how to build an online, like a course or an online coaching program, but not necessarily for children, also not specifically for cyclocross, because I have to say what inspires me more is mindset and the way we are programmed in our mind, in our subconscious mind. I love this aspect of if you want to achieve a result. I mean, we tend to think that it's only the doing that is making the result, but there's also another big part of us, that who we are, how we show up, and what energy we do things.
Yeah.
So this is something I'm currently working on, but it's not for cyclocross.
Yeah. Let's just stay a bit with like cyclocross. How, in your eyes, has cyclocross developed over the years? So when you started to become like one of the top athletes into like your retirement, and then also, first that question, then I have another question on top.
Well, it changed a lot when I started. there were no salary. So I mean, I was paid 300, 400 euros a month. And of course, that was a huge difference compared to the men athletes. When I signed my first contract with Telenet Fidea, I don't know, it was in 2010, maybe 11. Then I signed for a few hundred euros. And then I think the riders like Stieber were already earning a multiple 100,000 euros. Mm-hmm. So the gap was immense. And then the women, our start time would be very early in the morning. So we would hardly have any spectators to watch. So that changed. Then they put our start time just in front of the elite men's race. And that would, cause that people, spectators, would come a little bit more early and also watch our race. And eventually that evolved in live racing, and with the races being held on live television, also the money that was involved would increase. I think when I won the World Cup overall classification, the prize money was not the same, but I think a few years, 1 or 2 years after, it was the same. And now I think at the moment, all the prize money is the same and the female athletes get paid much better, and they are now treated, well, equally as the men, races. So it's a huge difference, like huge, day and night.
Yeah. I just saw on I think a post cycling stats, you were riding until 2022 with Parkhotel Falkenburg on the road, I think. But then off-road, you were racing for?
I had my private sponsors.
So that point I wanted to come. So like, I think your last year, was it already then your last year? Where you then started to sign for like private contracts?
Well, that evolved a little bit. When I think it was 2016, the team I was riding for, it stopped. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to have any female athletes in their team. They only wanted to focus on men elite pro riders. So then I got the chance to... it was a little bit complicated situation, but I had this private, I had a manager and also private sponsors. I was working with Colnago, Rafa, and there was one big financial partner involved. And this was a very nice situation for me. So I was the only one in my team, but I was working with Camille van der Berg. He's also an old professional
cyclocross
rider.
I was racing with him.
Then you know he always had these good starts. What he always told me. So I was working with a lot of nice brands. I loved working with Rafa, for instance. They made this personalized suit for me.
Yeah, I know that you had a really, really nice style. You were one of the first ones with a very great, great style.
I think that was a little bit the start of that the clothes were not as, with the 100 different logos on it.
Yeah.
It was a bit like the what you see now on gravel quite often, like this privateer life. I think that's where it started. Eh? I mean, now also in cyclocross, you have that more and more with like some Americans and so on. But you were the first top European athlete, eh? I think, doing something
this. I think it was very new at the moment. Yeah. And a lot of people were like, why don't you want to join a team? And but I've always been a little bit different than the what is it? There's not like one type of athlete, but you know, in cyclocross, on a road cycling, you are on a team and everything is very much made for the whole team. And I don't know, I always have the preparation to follow my own path, do my own things. And for me, it was a perfect situation. And I after, but after a few years, my contract was ended because the main financial sponsor, they were almost went bankrupt. Mm. So it was it had to I had to find a solution, and I could join Parkhotel Valkenburg. I was always racing with them in summer, and at the moment when I signed with them, we were also racing with Demi Vollering and Lorena Wiebes. So it was actually very nice. We had a really nice road team, and then in winter I could do cyclocross.
Do you like road racing as well? Or is it more like that you had to do it or like training?
I like it, but it's, I think I'm not a typical road racer. I for me, the racing in the peloton, it's always stressful. And
yeah, that's what I remember a bit. I mean, we raced together like Turing Rundfahrt, and I think,
oh yeah,
because I also struggle a bit in the peloton, and I think that I always saw that you have the same problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to say, it's just not something that comes to me naturally, racing in a peloton. And I'm also not a very good road racer. I'm not a good climber. I'm not a sprinter. I'm not a time trial specialist. I'm a little bit of nothing. And
we like to say all-rounder.
Yeah, that's more positive. No, I think if you want to be very good at the road, you just need to have this one specialty or like a combination of a few things, but you have to accelerate. You have to be very good at least one field. And
yeah. So how did it come that then you ended 2021 your career in cyclocross?
Well, it was a combination of things. I had a back injury, which was already, yeah, giving me a lot of troubles for, I think, 1 or 2 years. And I could not really solve the problem. It was actually, yeah, a sort of, during the road season and in my preparation, everything went very well. But then always for the last two seasons, when the season started, the back problems increased. Because of, you know, when we with cyclocross, we shoulder our bike on the one side, so this causes imbalance in the body. And the problem was on the lower back of my right side. It was the side where I shoulder my bike. So when I started to do more intensity training in cyclocross, it always got worse. Yeah, got worse, and that's why I could not really compete in the front and top five positions anymore. And well, what I said, I found out that racing for me and putting all the effort in top sport, the everything that you don't do and everything that you have to do, it for me, it only makes sense when I can race in the front. And well, when I wasn't even possible to race a top 10 result, yeah, the fun went out a little bit.
Yeah.
So that was the reason I stopped.
Yeah, no, I can totally understand that.
Yes.
And was then also when you decide, okay, I just want to take maybe a different path. I mean, you just explained you're going to like a different direction, not in cycling, but like what you want to work and becoming a mom. Is that things which then just like happen naturally? I said, all right, now it's maybe a good time to be a mom?
Yes and no. So... yeah,
say the question differently. Did from that moment you stopped, was it for you like a clear cut? So that's it with professional cycling in general?
It's also a yes and a no. I find it difficult to answer that. On the one hand, yes. When I stopped, I was completely fine with it. I thought, okay, I have more dreams, I have more goals, I have more qualities, there are more things in life I can do. So when I stopped, I immediately could start working as a TV analyst and this was very much fun. I was still involved in the cyclocross, in the world of cycling. I could do something that came naturally to me. I mean, I was struggling for 2 years, which was mentally hard, because if you mean you put all your energy and time in this one thing, in these races, and then when it's not working, I mean, this is hard.
Yeah, your own expectations. So it's just like what you're expecting of yourself, like with the work you have done, and
exactly. And so, and I mean, I knew I wanted to become a mother, so it was the perfect moment. But then when I was pregnant, and when I when Maxime was here, I found out that it's quite hard to find something new in your life which gives you the same drive, the same energy as what sports give you. I mean, sports in that way, it is so nice, because you have this goal and you have this time with yourself, that you are pushing yourself, that you are making the plan. Okay, how am I going to do this? I have this goal. How am I going to get there? And I have to say I found it a bit hard to find this in something new. So that's when Maxime was born, I thought, okay, I'm just going to do a few races. But then when I'm back into it, I only have one modus to do it. I want to do it very well, and I want to push myself very hard. So that's how I got back into, well, sort of professional cycling again. But now, yeah, that changed again. So now I need to find something in my life which gives me the same fulfillment as sports do. But it's also exciting, and it's new, and it's learning. It's also a new challenge.
But So do you feel ready for it? So I don't want to go too deep in it, because I know it's sometimes hard to answer that. I mean, I stopped end of 2016 with my road career. So I had like a 5-year gap until I started again with gravel. And I also had whole time in my mind, I thought I'm finished. So also mentally, but then I kept realizing during Corona, that's actually not it. There's something in me which is unfinished, so I have to start again. But then also I'm not a father, you know. Even if I'm a father, I think it will be much easier for me to just start again than being a mother, because you have other responsibilities, because the baby kinda wants to be with you all the time, or has to be for a certain time, and the body changes everything. So I can't imagine how hard it must be when you really have to drive in yourself, and you're just used to like being competitive all the time, than just really having to stop. Yeah.
I think it's a little bit of a complex answer, because as you said, I also had that feeling. There's something more in me. I can still achieve a really good level. I still love to race. I still love the process of improving myself. So with that in mind is why I signed in, I think it was September or so, the contract to race for 2 years, to those 2024 and 2025. And well, as I explained, it was not my decision to end this contract. So otherwise, if the contract wasn't ended, I would still race for 2 years. And so I totally understand what you say. But on the other hand, what I also experienced in the last few weeks is that to become, to be a professional athlete and to have great results and have joy in racing and all these things, you have to put in a lot of work and a lot of energy. And it's not that you decide, okay, I want to be racing in the front again. Okay, let's do it. I mean, you have to put in the hours, you have to put in the work. And I have to say now that with a family, the sacrifices that I have to make to do that, I'm not sure if I want to do that. That's what crossed my mind in the last few weeks, that I also felt a sort of relief that I can be at the birthday of my daughter, that I'm not away for training camp, that I can spend time with her. And I mean, I've already done the professional career for a very long time. So I also feel now that I'm okay with pursuing other things in life and getting satisfaction from other things. And yeah, so at this moment, I'm okay with doing multiple things in life, to have a family. And also, I also have the wish to have another baby. So it's also, I mean, the whole process of getting pregnant and the delivery of the baby and then getting fit again, this is this insane process. It's doable, but it's not easy. And yeah, I mean, I have massive respect, for instance, for Lizzie Danian, who done it
that's
twice.
Crazy. That's
yeah, it's
to
very
be honest,
crazy.
It's like, I'm a man. I can't give birth, so I really have no idea how that is. But what she is doing is just, that's like, for me, not, that's unimaginable. It's like unbelievable, like doing that again, twice, as you said, like once. If you're doing that now, luckily that's becoming normal in cycling now, and even teams giving you contracts where they say, yeah, when you're getting pregnant, you still get paid and so on. But twice. And then yeah, she's on her way back again. And she's not that young anymore, huh? She's not like 25. So like age takes a toll. It's just how it is. Everything takes a bit longer. It's crazy. Yeah.
No, it definitely is. And yeah, it's, you know, at a certain moment, I asked myself, okay, with the time and energy I have, what do I want to do with it? What is making me the most happy now and the most fulfilling? And, you know, the process of becoming an athlete and to be in a season of racing. I mean, I love it. You go from race to race and you have all these different experiences. I mean, it's very special. But the price you have to pay to do this, yeah, it is very high. And also with the involvement of gravel racing, there are quite a lot of teams now. There are a lot of athletes now, female athletes, who pursue a career in gravel. It's not that I'm the only one. It's not that, okay, I want to do this and that there's a whole line of people, okay, we want to work with you. There at the moment, there are so many young, talented girls who also want to just focus on gravel, so that also changed a lot.
Yeah. That's how we see it, and how I realized it also in the first races. Yeah, but I can totally understand that also with a little child. And yeah, I mean, you, it's time you don't have with your child then when you are racing and traveling and. I think I can totally understand if you don't want to combine that. I mean, I wouldn't combine that. If I would be a mom, I think I won't race anymore.
No, I think it's different for everyone, and it also depends a lot on what kind of baby and how the pregnancy was. It's very different for a lot of women. But well, I think at the end of the day, I mean, it's a little bit of a cliche, but life is short. It's not that long. We have to make the decisions, what ultimately leads to what is making us most happy and fulfilling. And for me, I realized in the last few weeks, the price which I would have to pay for being a full-time professional athlete, for me, it is very high. And then I made the decision, okay, I'm totally fine with now going into a new career and still do some gravel racing, but just with a different mindset. I'm not going to be on the start line anymore and expect me to be in your wheel, Caroline. If I will just be like, okay, I'm just going to enjoy myself and I'm not going to have an expectation or a hope for a certain result.
Yeah,
and I think that's totally fine. And yeah, that's also a good decision.
Yeah, but to be honest, so I think it's also important to have athletes like you, like who have been like on the top of the sport, and then like just taking a different path, but still wanting to competing is maybe the wrong word for it, but like taking part in these events. You still try, if you're there, you're still trying to be as fast as you can, but you're not putting, everything, you know, on the line as like Caro does and I do. But it's good to have like, yeah, still people like you as an ambassador for the sport, you know, like, because it's growing, and it's also important to show there's like another, it's not everything is like 100% serious. There's also like these other bits of like top athletes can actually just go there and enjoy themselves without doing everything 100% right for it and so on. So I think that's also a really important factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a shift now in gravel that it once was this sport where a lot of people just would race and have fun. And now it's changing towards a professional sport with professional athletes. And of course, it is not a secret that if you turn professional, you put so much time and effort in it, you really hope to achieve this kind of result. And sometimes it takes a little bit away the fun in sports. So yes, I see your point. I find it interesting. I'm curious how it will develop in the next 5 to 10 years with gravel. For me, it would not surprise me if the sport would turn Olympic and an Olympic sport.
Yeah, it will be very interesting. We are also very curious to see.
Sorry?
No, say.
Well, I don't know. I heard people say, yeah, this will kill the spirit of gravel.
Yeah. That's already been killed 2 years ago.
Yes.
in a massacre somewhere in the US. So the spirit of gravel is in my eyes still existing, just in a different form. And because that was also one of the questions, where you see the future of gravel. Do you think cyclocross will be Olympic at one point? So where do you see cyclocross evolving to? I mean, are you really following still closely? Yeah? You say you're still like you're being a commentator for Dutch TV, I guess.
Mostly Belgian. But so last winter I decided to not do the commentary. Is it commentary? The analyzing, yeah. Yes. Because I wanted to focus on training. So last winter I decided to not do the television job, but I still follow it, of course. Well, I have to say, I don't know. It's the sport is changing. They are trying new things. For instance, there is now this new rule which makes it difficult that on the days where there's a World Cup held in a foreign country, that it is not possible to race in your own country. And they want to, I'm not sure if I say it correctly, but what they want is to force the riders, if there are World Cups in different, in different countries, they want the professional riders to go there. Because this is like this thing in cyclocross, that most riders, because the program is so full, they don't want to go to the USA to race a World Cup there. I mean, it's very tiring to go to have the jet lag twice and to do the cyclocross races and this whole program with a lot of races, very short, shortly after each other. But this also kills the sport because it doesn't get international. So this is this thing in cyclocross that on the one hand, they want to make it bigger. They want to grow the sport, have more events in different countries. But on the other hand, a lot of the Belgian teams, they just want their riders to do the Belgian races because these will be held on television. And if there are sponsors paying for television time, you obviously want your riders to be on the television racing in the front. And so that makes it difficult for the sport to grow if all the races are being held just in one tiny country.
Yeah. It feels like we are kind of on a crossroad because it also you can feel that the interest is actually growing. and cycle cross, but it's also because of the, of Mathieu and Wout and Tom Pidcock, and on the female side, it's getting also like the racing gets more and more interesting and more and more, more competitive. I mean, the girls making also the name on the road now, so it's the same as the man. And yeah, but as you said, like to actually grow the sport and to I think the Belgium stars and Dutch stars, they're already earning a lot of money. So, but the cake is really small, and the biggest pieces are with them, and the rest actually is almost earning nothing, like the German team, you know, like other countries like Czech Republic and so on. I think to make the cake bigger, you have to globalize it. But I see that point with the traveling. But then again, everyone else has to travel to Belgium or Netherlands. Even,
yeah.
So like I'm living in Berlin. We always drove the day before the World Cup, every time we case. And then we still won the World Cup in the under 23 and so on. And then we had to drive back. It was just normal. And the Netherlands and Dutch, the kind of, for them it's normal to travel an hour, 2 hours, you know?
Yeah. Well, it is, I think it's one part, it's what you're being used to. But on the other part, and how I always experience cyclocross, we have this very short season. The start is end of September, beginning of October. And then we basically race for maximum of 5 months. And in these months, we have almost only double weekends. And with cyclocross, the thing is, it is so high intensity. It is only 40, 50 minutes high intensity. So you have to be really fit for it. You have to be fresh. And I think that the sport is not very suitable to go all over the whole country because you, how do I explain this? For road cycling, for instance, you have the beginning of the season, and then you have a little bit of rest. Then the riders work towards like a big, like the Tour de France, or I don't know, the Giro. And then you have maybe a little bit of rest, and then you do another block of racing. And there, and cyclocross is just months, 4 or 5 months. It's only racing, 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 racing. And I think that is why most athletes don't want to travel too much. They prefer a race, rest, do some proper training, and not to make the decision to travel and have a lot of unnecessary time spent on traveling and not being able to rest. Because if you're in a traditional cyclocross week, it is a Monday, you have rest, Tuesday train, Wednesday you do this cyclocross training with its high intensity. And then for me, Thursday, Friday is rest. And then Saturday, Sunday, it's racing again. And you do that for 5 months. So you don't want to spend too much time on traveling. So I think that is also a little bit part of why it's not, why the athletes maybe don't want to travel too much, go to too many different World Cups in different countries every week. Does it make sense what I'm explaining?
Yeah, it, totally. Yeah. I mean, that's also at the moment the discussion we have with the UCI rule with the races in the World Cup the riders have to do. So that's kind of the same direction, I think.
Yeah.
Yes, and I think, and then another aspect is that with, for instance, what I noticed that when we have Mathieu, Wout, and Tom, and it's, I mean, I love to see them. I love to see them racing, but now they make the combination with mountain bike and road racing. So therefore, it's not possible to do a whole cyclocross program because a whole cyclocross program, it is very intense. If you do about 40 races, I mean, this is a lot. To be able to do 40 races of this high intensity and to be well performing at the World Championship, you really need a very well summer. And I think what a lot of people don't see is that the pure cyclocross riders who make the decision to focus on a cyclocross season, they cannot also focus on road, for instance. They make the decision, I'm going to prepare very well during summer, and then I'm going to choose to do a whole cyclocross program in winter. But this is very, very different approach from Mathieu or from Wout. They come and they do a few races. They have a very high level, because these are world-class athletes. But it also downgrades a little bit the effort of the pure cyclocross races, who make the decision to do a whole season, to do all the races, and maybe are at the end of the season a little bit tired because they have been doing all these races. But it also, this is typical discussion in Belgium, in the Netherlands, where people say, oh, when Mathieu or Wout, when they are not here, we're not watching. We're not going to watch. It's not interesting. And I find that a little bit sad, because the pure cyclocross race, it's such an effort to do this whole season.
Yeah, I think it's a really complex topic. I think money plays also a big role in it. Why there are so many races, why like Izabeth and so racing every weekend. And I think it's actually another episode, because that's, I find it an interesting topic, but like as I just mentioned, really, it's not as easy as to say, right, let's change that and that, and then we change the whole game. It's really
otherwise
complex.
Otherwise, it would have been changed a long time ago. And my opinion now is, I think it's always good when there are little changes. But maybe we should also just accept cyclocross is this maybe small sport. It's very fun. It's very, very entertaining. And I love it for what it is. But maybe accept that it's not going to be as booming, for instance, as gravel now is at the moment, where race is popping up all over the world.
That's actually an interesting view, and you could be right. If you're all just being happy with how it is, could be maybe the solution. But we as humans, we like to complain, and we like to keep changing things around. And we like to try to make everything bigger, to put even more money into it, or gaining more money out of it. So it's complex in the end again. But yeah, maybe you're just right, and we should just leave it how it is, because it is working. It's nice. It makes fun to watch. But it would also be cooler if more people could actually participate, or more countries had actually really a real chance on like being world class, and not just the filling material, you know, for the lower end of the results. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's also another aspect of the sport. For instance, if you know the bikes, we change bikes. Well, not me anymore, but they change bikes. And for instance, if you want to participate in the race, you need two bikes. You need more wheels. So it's quite costly. And I also figured that out I was booking my ticket to the Traca, and you know, with so many people coming in, it was a bit hard to find a nice flight and a hotel. And I was like, this is quite an expensive sport to have as a hobby.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it is, definitely.
Yeah, 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 yeah. don't do Unbound. It's too expensive.
No, one day. Well, how was it, Caroline? Well, you both obviously been doing it very well, but explain to me, how is it racing this crazy distance in one day?
For me, I kind of also enjoyed it, because I'm really the type of person who like to go long distances. So for me, it's exactly what I am good in. So, I mean, what you said before, that you need to find something we are really good. I think that's, for me, the going long distances, because I always feel also in training after 5 hours, I feel comfortable. And then I think, okay, I have a small engine and I can go and go and go. So yeah, for me, it's good to have such long races. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So Traca 200 for her is just like a warm up.
No, I think that's harder for me. So that's more challenging.
Yeah.
But aren't you now then focusing on a lot of VO2 max training? Is that something you do or threshold?
Yeah, I do a lot like, yeah, on the threshold, like over and under, not that much high intensity like I did it when I raced on the road. So that changed a lot.
Because yeah. I find it interesting with gravel. I mean, like 2 years ago, as Paul said, it was possible to just, I mean, go there and do the race. So I remember then I did a few 150, 200 kilometer trainings. But I feel now that even last year I did a few World Series, you really need to train in all the areas. You need to be your VO2 max needs to be high, and you need to have a very good threshold power. But at the same time, you need to be able to be for 8 or maybe 10 hours on the bike. So the whole body has to be strong. Your endurance has to be strong. It's quite a puzzle to.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also that you have to be, yeah, also in the high intensity, because in the beginning of the race, you have to be there and you have to be in the group. If you are not there, then you are away and you have no chance. So you are completely right. It's like a puzzle.
Yeah, it's a complex system trying to win Unbound and then also UCI races. They're different worlds. You can't really actually compare them, but we're all doing them and we're all trying to be good there. Makes it so gravel, it's more than just riding. So luckily
I trust my coach
sorry.
I trust my coach
yeah me too, but I also think for us it's good that it's actually that complex, otherwise I think we can play out our strength even more. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. That's interesting.
I don't want to kick you out, but I need to go to my physiotherapist. So I kind of want to both kick you out, but like on a friendly way, obviously. Thank you very much that you took the time on the birthday of your daughter. Really appreciate that. I saw already on Instagram you celebrated it this morning.
Yes, and yesterday. We had a little party. I think, well, if parents, they understand it, that is quite a milestone, the first birthday.
Yeah, it's special.
And I'm happy that we're 1 year further than last year, because then I was in labor and I, oh my God.
Yeah, okay, that's a whole other topic. I'm sometimes quite happy I'm a man, to be honest. yep. All right. On that note, thank you for your time.
Yeah, and thank you so much, Sophie. Really great.
See you in Spain, probably.
Yeah.
Yes, and we have to do the ride on Mallorca.
Yes, we will. We're going to do that. Yes, we're going to do that. Nice.
But just one more question. When is Trucker 560? Does it start on Wednesday or Thursday?
Wednesday.
Okay.
So there are three and a half days. Then you have to finish.
Yeah, but I think we both are pretty sure you would do it before. So I don't think you will need 3.5 days. Come on.
I really don't know. I just don't know.
So the only tip I can give you, because I have done a few of these like long trips, just take it easy from the beginning.
Yeah.
If you try to race, you're gonna lose.
Yeah, exactly. No. I'm just going to start very, very, very easy.
Yeah. And then, we might come to the finish line to celebrate then a bit.
Yes.
We'll see.
Yeah. Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.